Okay, folks, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Julie Evans. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Project Tomorrow, and I hope that you're all here in the right room. We're going to talk about school and district leaders speaking up about their views on education, technology, and 21st century learning. Everybody in the right place? Okay, great. Let's keep going. Our focus, of course, for the entire conference is on making sure that today's learners have the 21st century schools that they truly need. Yes, ma'am? I was actually speaking with a big girl voice, playground voice, but we'll try it. Can you see where you turn
it on? There's a button on the top.
Is there a button on the top?
Maybe yours has to be. That one does.
Like that? Does that sound better?
No. There's a button over here, too.
Here we go, being technical.
Okay, in the meantime, I'm still going to use, I'll use a little bit more of a playground voice as we get started until we figure this out. Thanks, Ryan. Okay. Of course, we're interested in creating 21st century schools and making sure that the kids are well prepared for the jobs and careers of the future. This is a quote that we received this year from one of the administrators in Chicago Public Schools. He really talks about the use of technology as being a thoughtless, seamless process and to be as automatic as picking up a piece of chalk. He also makes the point that not only are the students expecting this level of technology, but the new teachers are as well. So our focus of our conversation today is on some new data findings from the Speak Up National Research Project, particularly from the administrator point of view. We also have a panel discussion that we are going to have here in a moment with some of our what we're calling our voices of experience. And then if you are not familiar already with Speak Up, I'm going to give you an invitation to participate this year. We do have two wonderful panelists with us today. Thea Jones is the Supervisor of Information Technology Office at Baltimore County Public Schools. And Ryan Imbriali, I got it, is the assistant principal at Perry Hall High School, which is actually in Baltimore County Public Schools as well. So we're actually going to have a district versus school site comparative when we get to our panel discussion with Thea and Ryan. How many people in the room are familiar with the Speak Up National Research Project? Could I just see a show of hands? It's a handful of people. All right, let me give you the 1, 2, 3 on that, because that's really the basis of some of the data that we are going to be looking at today. It is a national research project. It's conducted 100% through online surveys. It's open to every school and district in the United States, Canada, and around the world as well. And the chief component of this is not only do we collect this data and share it with Congress, the U.S. Department of Education, U.S. Department of Commerce, as well as state governor's offices, every participating school and district also gets back their own data from the surveys, as well as the national benchmark data. We've been doing this since fall of 2003. Since that time, we've had 1.2 million surveys submitted to us. There are surveys available for K-12 students, teachers, parents, and school administrators. I'll talk a little bit more about the surveys in a couple minutes. The survey process is facilitated by Project Tomorrow. We're a national education nonprofit group. Our focus is on making sure that today's students are well prepared for the jobs and careers of the future. The questions that we ask on the Speak Up survey are generally around learning and teaching with technology. We also ask some questions about Web 2.0 in education, 21st century skills. We did a thematic group of questions last year around science instruction and global competitiveness, STEM careers. And we also asked questions around what we were calling emerging technologies in the classroom, online learning, the use of mobile devices, and gaming. And every year we ask all the respondents, so if you were in charge of designing the ultimate school for learners, teachers, administrators just like you, what would be the technology components that would be essential for that school? So I'll be sharing some of this data with you today. Just to give you an overview, the data that I'm sharing with you today is from our survey from last year. The 2007 survey was open for about 6 weeks last fall, and during that time we collected about 367,000 surveys from schools and districts all across the country, about 3,800 schools across the country. Actually, Speak Up 2008, this year's survey, opened yesterday, and it will be open until December 19th. I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go through. So last year was the first year that we had a Speak Up survey for administrators. What we were trying to find out was, are the behaviors, values, and aspirations of administrators similar to teachers? How do they differ from students? How does it inform our work with students? Where are administrators on the spectrum in terms of their own personal technology use and also the values they have regarding technology use within 21st century learning? Just to give you a little profile, we had about 3,200 administrators take the survey. Some represented district positions, some were school site-based. About two-thirds of them were female, 39% had 11 plus years of administrative experience, and almost 50% of them had at least a master's in education. First question that we asked the administrators was not actually a technology question. We asked them, what wakes you up in the middle of the night? Now, if you're sitting here and you're an administrator, you probably know that answer. Bing, bang, boom. Let's see what the national data told us from this. What we actually learned was that there was a difference to some degree depending upon if you were a district administrator or a school site administrator. So looking at this, the blue line is the district level administrator. So that could be a superintendent, assistant superintendent, curriculum administrator, maybe a CIO or CTO. And the school site administrator were almost exclusively principals and assistant principals in that batch. So you can see that, in fact, funding was a much bigger issue at the district level. Not that it wasn't an important level at the school site, but much bigger issue or challenge at the district level. Test scores, on the other hand, were the number one item that were waking up our school principals in the middle of the night. District was concerned, but not to the same extent. They both shared the same, shall we say, pain in the middle of the night regarding NCLB, recruiting new teachers. And then you can see some of the other differences that are in there as well. And one of the things I'll make a point of here, Lori Smith, who is my colleague at Project Tomorrow, has handed out some handouts to you, but she also has a sign-up sheet. I am happy to provide this presentation to anyone that wants it. So if you would just sign up or give us a card, I'm happy to send it to you. One of the key findings from our Speak Up data last year was that the digital disconnect is alive and well. It was really the reason we started Speak Up 5 years ago, was to see what were the differences between students' use of technology and the adults that surround them and support their educational environment. What we have found is that digital disconnect is not only alive and well, it's actually widening. It's not just between the students and the teachers, though. It's also between advanced students, students that assess their own tech skills as advanced, and all other students. There continues to be a disconnect between girls and boys in some areas, and also between older and younger students. So to get to know my audience a little bit here, and this is always fun, how would you assess your own technology skills compared to your peers? Do you see yourself as a beginner, average, or advanced? I'm not going to put anybody on the spot here. Just kind of think about it yourself. From our national polling, here's the way it broke down for our group. Across the board, whether they were an administrator, a teacher, or a parent, most people consider their skills to be average. Our administrators actually thought they were a little bit more advanced than the teachers and parents. That might be what we would expect, or some of us might expect. Now here's a quiz. We're going to do a couple quizzes in here just to make sure that you're alert and staying with us. What percentage of students in middle school and high school do you think consider themselves advanced tech users? Is it 6%, 24%, or 70%? Now this one I am going to take an audience poll on. How many people think it's 6%? Raise your hand. Okay, 24%? A few. Okay, 70%? Okay. Now this is the fun part of my job. I get to say, survey says. Survey says. Survey actually said that 24% of the students consider themselves advanced. 70% of our students that you're seeing every day really consider what they're doing as average. Now if we had those students here with us, we would all be looking at them going, those are advanced tech users. But it points to this digital disconnect. Our perception, in many cases being digital immigrants, is different than the student perception coming from being a digital native. We asked the students, what do you regularly do with technology? And I'm going to share some of this with you so we can compare and contrast it with the administrator point of view. What the students are doing is what I affectionately refer to as the big four: online and computer gaming, downloading and listening to music, communications, using all sorts of different tools and devices, and maintaining a personal website, a MySpace or a Facebook page. In fact, about two-thirds of students kindergarten through 12th grade told us that they are regularly playing some sort of games. It is still the number one, music though, is still the number one activity for middle school and high school students. In communications, that's where we still see a disconnect between girls and boys. Girls tend to do a little bit more communicating. And in regards to personal websites, our data told us about 40% of middle school students and about two-thirds of high school students are regularly maintaining, actively, enthusiastically maintaining some sort of a MySpace or Facebook page. Once again, this data is from last year, and we are collecting this data again this year. So we asked administrators, so what do you do regularly with technology? Well, the number one, very pervasive, as you all would attest to, 93% say they're emailing a colleague, something work-related, or a parent of a student. And we know there's a lot of PowerPoints that are being created out there. Some of the things that the students told us they were doing, though, are starting to show up on the radar screen for our administrators. About a third of our administrators are regularly downloading, listening to music. About 21% say they email a student on a regular basis. Interestingly, that number sits right on top of the same percentage I have from teachers that say that they email students. It's about that same number, and that number has been flat for several years, actually. About 16% actually admitted that they play some sort of online games. And 11%, again from last year, said they were maintaining some sort of a personal website. These are also data points we're going to keep track of this year. We asked administrators to value the use of technology within instruction. 84% said it enhances student achievement. And in terms of asking them about the effective implementation is as its importance to developing or delivering their core mission, about half said it was extremely important, 34% said important. So nice, strong value statements from the administrators in our poll. We ask students every year, how satisfied are you with technology use at your school? So here we're hearing from the administrators, it's important to the mission, it increases student achievement. Let's now flip it and look at what the students say in terms of their satisfaction with technology use at school. In fact, they have some obstacles. Once again, probably not a surprise to anyone here in this room. The number one obstacle, and it's been the number one obstacle for all 5 years that we've done the poll with students, is filters that block websites that I need. The students increasingly speak about how they feel their education is being limited by the firewalls and filters that we've made these huge investments in. The one that showed up this year for the very first time on our survey was where students said teachers limit our technology use, that the teachers are in themselves an obstacle to the technology use. Beside doing the survey, we also do every spring a series of focus groups around the country. It helps us validate the data, it helps me ask questions that we can't ask on the survey, and it's actually the best part of my job because I absolutely love the opportunity to sit down with students and hear directly from them. What the students told us this year was that, in fact, their use of technology was better a couple years ago before we went and trained all the teachers in how to use technology. They felt that what has happened is that there's been a sort of a flip on this, where now most of the teachers are much more comfortable using technology, but also more aware of some of the quote-unquote, as the kids would say, dangers about the internet, and thus are restricting student access to the internet and using that technology as part of the daily school instructional plan. So the students actually were complaining that it was better a couple years ago. Students still are complaining, shall we say, about some of the rules that prevent them from using the tools. And we are continue to hear, have started hearing this a couple years ago, continue to hear that the students tell us that they in fact have to power down to get to go into school. That school is a power down environment as opposed to an information intensive environment. We asked the students, so what would make school easier for you to use technology? So if you have complaints, what are your recommendations? The number one thing that came up this year, and to be honest with you, it surprised us, was let me use my own tools and devices. If I have a laptop, let me bring it to school, let me use it at school, and in fact, let me have access to the network, both during the school day and after school. And I know all the issues associated with that. But from the student point of view, that was the number one that came up. They also want to be able to have unlimited internet access and to be able to, once again, even without that laptop, to have access to that network. The kids increasingly tell us about their frustration with starting school-based projects using technology and then not being able to access those from home, or not understanding why the investment that their school and district has made in all this wonderful technology in that media lab is shut down tight at 3 o'clock. Why can't they have access to it after school or on the weekends? Why can't they access it from home? We asked the administrator, so what's the most challenging thing about the use of technology within instruction from your point of view? And what we heard from the top five was that funding for new technologies, staff professional development, funding to update technologies, technology support, and any of the database reporting were those top five that came up. The ones that did not show in that top five may surprise you. They were things around student record privacy, digital equity, and accessing school websites and portals. So one of the things, as I mentioned, that we did a focus group of questions on across the board was these new battleground areas, emerging technologies in education. In particular, we asked administrators about mobile devices and online learning. So I want to share a little bit of that compare and contrast between students and administrators on that. Regarding mobile devices, we asked specifically about cell phones, laptops, MP3 players, and smartphones. Now, this is a busy slide, but I want to do a little deciphering here for you. What we did is that we asked kindergarten through 12th graders, which of these devices do you have personal access to? Now, just I want to sort of clue you in on a couple things. The dark blue bar is kindergarten, first, and second graders. This is our national data. You can see almost 40% of kindergarten, first, and second graders said they had personal access to a cell phone. Look over, and you can see the numbers go up from there. Look at the MP3 players. We saw a huge explosion in students having their own personal access to iPods. I'm sure you've seen it in the classrooms and in your schools. But those are coming to school in their backpacks. That's a computer in their backpack. The other thing that we asked on, and I have to apologize to you because we did not ask this of the kindergarten, first, and second graders. I now know that we should have. The survey that opened yesterday is doing that. Who has a smartphone? Who has a BlackBerry and a Trio that they're bringing with them to school? You can see our third, fourth, and fifth graders, that's our green bar right there, about 15% from a year ago were coming to school with a Trio or a BlackBerry. Talk in terms of mobile devices, in terms of organization, collaboration, having all sorts of access to technology. You can see how the number goes up from there. As I said, we didn't ask of the youngest kids last year, but we improved. We're asking it this year. It'll be interesting to see. What the students want to do with these mobile devices, they do want to do communications. They also want to do collaborations, creativity, and productivity. And this gets to a really important point or finding from our data findings. Quite often we will, particularly from an educator or digital immigrant standpoint, we will talk about the value of technology within instruction about engagement. Students are better engaged if there's a technology component. They enjoy it more, they're more engaged, they have more fun with it. If we had a group of students here, they don't really use that same terminology. In fact, the kids have sort of moved beyond the engagement fun component of technology. It's still important, but they talk increasingly about productivity, they talk about being more efficient, they talk about being more effective, they talk about being able to do higher quality work. They actually use business terms to define their use of technology. I will offer up to you, I think until we move off of a conversation that we're having, which stops at engagement and starts talking about the productivity gains associated with technology, we're not really going to move this along the spectrum here in terms of really incorporating it effectively. As I said, administrator view on the value of mobile devices, it is about engagement. The administrators also told us it helps students prepare for the world of work and develop critical thinking skills. In terms of online learning, we did ask about all the different flavors of online learning. We found out that students had already a lot of experiences with online learning, in many cases outside of their school. Students were increasingly seeking out online learning opportunities that had nothing to do with their instructional plan in their school day, but were actually seeking that out on their own. And what we found was about 1 in 4 high school students had some sort of experience with online learning. Large interest in online learning, all the way from third graders up through 12th graders, interested in really exploring online learning. We asked administrators about their implementation of online learning, and what we found was that there's a wide variety out there, as you know. About 15% said that they were doing some instructor-led on-campus online classes, another 14% instructor-led anywhere, in some cases using some of the services or even teachers from out of state. 17% were solely student-directed on their own. 13% blended environment, and a third of the administrators told us that they were already using online learning for professional development. This was interesting because what we heard from the teachers this year was about a quarter of teachers in our teacher survey told us online classes were their number one preferred way for professional development today. Very interesting. What would influence a decision to provide or expand online classes? Again, the engagement, but also to provide remediation, to expand curriculum offerings, to offer scheduling alternatives, the things that we generally think about with online learning. But this was the one that surprised us. A request from student or parents would be a significant influence on that decision, and teacher interest in teaching an online class would also drive an administrator to think anew about online learning. We thought those were significant. Barriers for both implementing mobile devices or online learning in the school or district, it's all about funding. Not any surprise there. The other things they talked about were the need for professional development, the digital equity issues, and how do you effectively integrate any of these tools into your standard curriculum? As I mentioned before, we always ask our respondents, so if you could design that ultimate school, what I'm going to share with you is what the students said, and then we're going to look at specifically what the administrators said. But we first have one of these audience response components. So what do you think the students, and these would be kindergarten, first, second, all the way up through 12th graders, what do you think they said was the number one tech tool or device that would impact their learning? Is it a digital equipment for creating projects, gaming, personal laptops for every student, having student access to email or instant messaging from school, using mobile devices or online classes? What do you think? Anybody have an opinion?
B.
B, gaming and virtual simulations?
E.
E, using those mobile devices? Okay, well, let's, again, survey says, let's go and see. It actually is, the one response we have is the same response we've had for 4 years from kindergarten through 12th graders. It has not changed at all. Thea's nodding over here. Thea and I did a presentation together 2 weeks ago, so she knows the answer. Shh. Give me a laptop for my own personal use at home and at school. Now, I will tell you that when I focus group this and I talk to the kids, to some extent, the laptop is a proxy. They are interested in having control over their own learning environment. They are interested in driving their own educational destiny. They look at this device as that gateway product, no pun intended, to actually give them that sort of access. They are less concerned about, you know, what the brand is, what it does, but they really look at it as an access point to them driving their own destiny with education. Let's look at how it compared with the administrators, though, and this is really interesting. Once again, we disaggregated the data based on if the administrators were at the district level or at the school site level, because we thought this was kind of interesting. The blue line is your district administrators, the green are your principals, and then the student are the white. So you can see in terms of multimedia equipment for creating those digital productions, all three groups are basically on the same page. Students a little bit more advanced, but all on the same page. Also on the same page in terms of the one-to-one laptops, which is really interesting, and that's significant movement. If we have the teacher data here, you'll see teachers are right in line with that as well. But let's look, because I'm from California, so we like to look at the fault lines. Let's look in between and see where are there differences. There continue to be differences around gaming, where students are much more interested and consider an essential part of their education to have gaming within their school day. Also the same with unlimited internet access at their school, and still a little bit of a divide there on the mobile devices. But look at where online classes are. Actually, the district is more supportive of online classes as a key part of that school than the school site is as well. I thought that was just very interesting to look at that data that way. One of the questions that we asked for the last couple of years is your school, not the school down the street, not the school that's always written up in the newspaper or on the national news, but about your school, is your school doing a good job preparing you or your students or your child for future jobs? This information is really interesting. Our principals, in fact, are the most bullish. 66% of them said that their school was doing a good job, and then you see it starts going down from there. District administrators a little bit under 50%, teachers, parents 43%. And when I pull out just the students that consider themselves advanced tech users, less than a quarter of them feel that their school is doing the job that it needs to do to prepare them for the jobs and careers of the 21st century. This is a real wake-up call for all of us in terms of addressing the needs of all of our learners. A couple little things about Speak Up, and then I want to get into our panel. We have some interesting questions to ask our panel. If you are interested in more data, we do publish reports on our data. In fact, we have a wonderful online learning report that's available and a report about our science education data. A lot more data is available on our website as well. I've given you just a thumbnail sketch here today. And also, kind of sneak preview news here, we're actually releasing a new report tomorrow with Blackboard on what we're calling the new visionary administrator. That report will be released tomorrow morning. It will be available on our website and Blackboard's website probably by mid-morning, right, Lori? We're doing a press event in the morning. You might want to check out that report. I'm going to give you just what sort of the headline is from that report, because it's really interesting. From our data analysis, we were able to uncover or discover a new cohort that's just starting to emerge of what we're calling visionary administrators who share some commonality regarding their values, their aspirations, and their behaviors around the use of technology. And in fact, they have more in common with their students in those areas than their peers. Really interesting cohort of that, and that's what we explore in this report, so you're going to want to check that out. As I said, lots of wonderful things on our website, and I mentioned at the top of our time here together that Speak Up 2008 opened up yesterday. The surveys will be open until December 19th. They are open to every school or district in the country to participate. There's no fee to participate at all. We look at it as an opportunity for you, your students, your teachers, your parents to have a voice in national discussions around education. Every year we do a congressional briefing in Washington, D.C. to share the data. It's also a way for you to learn what your stakeholders are thinking about, talking about, concerned about. As I mentioned, we have surveys for kindergarten through 12th graders. Those are great appropriate surveys. Teachers, parents, and administrators. The parent survey is available in English and Spanish. They only take about 20 minutes to take the survey. All the data is confidential and you get all your data back. The questions this year are continuing around learning and teaching with technology, Web 2.0, 21st century skills. We're continuing to ask about those emerging technologies we talked about today and designing that 21st century classroom. So if any of those things were interesting to you and you want to hear from your stakeholders, you're going to want to participate with us. And the new questions that we're asking this year we're really excited about. We're asking questions around digital content. In particular, my personal favorite question, and we all have favorite questions, is that we're asking the kids, so if you were designing an online textbook, what features and functionality do you think that online textbook should have? This is going to be a really fun question. We also are asking about broadband access and policy. What are the issues associated with that? And then we're asking all of the groups about defining information and media literacy. What types of skills do students need to have? How are they authenticating resources? How is the best way for them to acquire those skills? All of this is available on this year's survey. If you are interested in looking at the survey questions, those are also available on our website as well. We have some wonderful sponsors that help us with the survey, including NSBA. As I said, it's open now. Okay, what I'd like to do now is turn our program over to our panelists that are here today. And as I said, it's a real treat because we actually have a comparative between a school assistant principal and a district administrator. And so we're going to hear back and forth from them about some of the things that we've been talking about this morning. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask them just a couple of questions, and then I want to open it up to all of you in terms of questions for our panel as well. So what I'd like to do is start with either Ryan or Thea, and I'd like to hear from you regarding Baltimore County Public Schools. What are the challenges that you are facing right now in terms of technology use within instruction? Thea, do you want to start
it
off?
Sure, and good morning. I'd also just like to give you a snapshot of the Baltimore County Public School System since both of us are representing that school system. We have 107,000 students. We go three-fourths of the way around Baltimore City. We are a metropolitan school system, and I just learned that term this weekend in a Washington Post article that said almost all of us live in metropolitan areas in the United States. It just blew me away. Describing urban, suburban, rural, all put together. So we are a metropolitan school system. We have 172 schools. Our superintendent is very much interested in pushing technology. So we do have visionary leadership at the top. But let me just address Julie's question, and thank you for inviting us to be here today. I think that the first thing that we always look at is equitable access. We have Title I schools that have lots of money, and we have those middle school, and I don't mean middle schools, we have those schools with $35,000 for a principal for the entire school year to spend in their school. It's not equitable when they have to be buying their own technology most of the time. So equitable access is very high. We also have very high, well, not very high, but of concern is teacher turnover. A lot of our teachers are not with us more than 5 years, so we go through all of the professional development, all the training, and we lose those teachers. So I would say very high on our list is to be able to come up with a way to keep our teachers over a long period of time. From my perspective at the district level, and even though we're charged with doing it, I believe that there's an incredible need for strategic planning to best leverage it, the funding that we have. We are right now, and I'll just take a couple minutes to share this because Ryan also is participating. We have been charged by our superintendent to look at 21st century learning in our schools, and what does that mean? What does it look like now? What do we want it to look like, and how do we get there? And then we're going to have to prioritize or do some strategic planning to get us there. So I think that strategic planning with some visionary leadership, both at the top level and in the schools, and from my point of view, following a lot of the research, vision at the school level is something that we're struggling with. Now, when you hear Ryan, he's a visionary leader, but we need lots and lots. We need 172 visionary leaders. We have just started a program with Hopkins where we are, Johns Hopkins University is in our neighborhood, and we are putting together cohorts of school leaders in technology to build some capacity in our schools. We just don't see that that there's a group of people where we need to have that leadership. And each school team must include a school administrator. So that's another thing that we find is a challenge. Even if there's a visionary leader, are they building capacity in that school for having teams of people working on that? In-school, on-demand training is where we need to go. The idea of, even if it's online and even if it's face-to-face in large groups, we believe, and this is a Maryland belief, that it's the one-to-one instructional coaches, technology integration teachers who are present in the building, who really understand what is technology integration. Is one of the biggest challenges that we have. We do have a 0.3 assignment to each school. Some of our administrators are building on that at the elementary level, but it's got to be that training or answers or help on demand in the school that's really going to move things forward. Some other challenges, and I'm not going to go there because Julie just addressed all of those, but it's an integrated curriculum. From my point of view, one of the strongest things that our office can do is work with other curriculum offices to use the state, and all of you have standards. I know whether they're the national ISTE standards for students. In Maryland, we have state standards for technology literacy. We're about to measure them with every seventh grader across the state in December and January, so that we can do our reporting for the No Child Left Behind to the federal government. So that whole idea of looking at the technology literacy of our students, teachers, and administrators, and how that is is going to drive some of the thinking for professional development, I think is going to be a challenge for us as we look at those results this year. So I'll just stop with those, and I think that your information is just critical. I would urge everybody to use the Speak Up opportunity. We only had a few schools last year, and I think every school gets a certificate. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you talked about that. But this year we're going to start the process so that we have a means of collecting data that we're not collecting now. We do a statewide online inventory for equipment. We've got some surveys that get some information, but the Speak Up survey is just absolutely very important for the kind of data that we need to start to collect and do that over time to affect the kinds of things that we're talking about when we talk about change.
Thank you, Thea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ryan, from your perspective as an assistant principal at a high school, what are the challenges that you're facing?
Good morning. not to jump on some of the same topics that were up here, but the things that jump out at me, and this is where it's always interesting when two people from the same school district in very different roles are, mm-hmm. are sitting next to each other. But, you know, district policies get in our way sometimes. So from a school district, from a school building administrator's perspective, you know, I look at the and I say, you know, not your policies, but the district policies are challenging us because they are putting, in many cases, roadblocks in our way. The other things that come out are staffing concerns. Thea mentioned some of those issues, but we're challenged because we get X number of full-time equivalent positions that we have to figure out what to do with. And with NCLB and the requirements on testings, the challenges that we have is as a school-based administrative team, we're often not going to make choices to allocate those resources to technology mm-hmm. when we're looking at our math scores, when we're looking at our English scores, when we're looking at our biology scores. So the challenge is we want to be able to have those positions provided to us so we know our technology is working, because our teachers say to us, if we don't trust the technology to work every time we try to use it, then we don't want to use it. So one of the big things I wrote down is, you know, unfortunately in our building we have about 175 certified staff, about 2,400 students, and we're suburban creeping on urban. And with that makeup, our challenge is that we can't provide every teacher all those tools, the whiteboard technology, all those things that we need to do to make that classroom interactive. It's in some classrooms, but it's not in all classrooms. Mm-hmm. So a student is in one room in one period, we're straight 7-period day, they're in one room first period, and then they go with all this technology, all these bells and whistles, they move to another room, and they don't have that technology at their fingertips. So as an administrative team, it's a challenge to us because we can't provide all those tools. And the funding is slim. What do we use? Our soda money? Do we use the money that we have at our side to do we? Where do we take it from? Because it's not coming from the district. The other thing that I wrote down, and I'm finding it more and more in my particular school building, where 60% of our teaching staff has less than 6 years of experience. They use the tools, many of them. They use those tools everywhere but at school. and part of that, I really have to ask what's happening in our pre-service education programs, because I'm not seeing them arrive to us prepared to use those tools in the classroom. Now, at the same token, we don't have all those tools in our classrooms, to be fair, but we need to do so much professional development to get them to the point where they feel comfortable using them. I'm wondering what's happening in our pre-service education programs and whether or not there's a big gap that exists there, because these teachers are not prepared. They know how to use the tools. They're comfortable using the tools. What they're not comfortable with is translating that into implementing it into the curriculum and integrating the technology. The other big challenge that we have is the mix between instruction and management. Mm. So when we do have the funding, when we do have choices, where is it going? Is it going to help us manage, or is it going to help us infuse the technology? Mm-hmm. And those are tough choices. You know, when we have dropout rates that are creeping up, when we have attendance problems, you know, do we use the technology to make sure every student's in school? Do we use the technology to infuse it in instruction? Where does the money go? Mm-hmm.
Those are all great points. I want to go back to the point that Ryan said about our pre-service teachers. and what's happening in our teaching colleges and universities. And I don't know if anyone has had similar experiences to what Ryan has had, but we've been hearing this all across the country, actually. Whenever we're doing, particularly when I did the focus groups with administrators this year, I heard similar type things. Now, this is totally, like, totally super secret stuff. So, you know, when you leave, we're going to have to, like, zap your head, and it's going to have to be exercise from your head, because we have not made an announcement about this. But we're, in fact, going to do a speak-up survey specifically for pre-service teachers. We're going to go into the teaching colleges and universities, because we're also concerned, and this is, I'm hoping there isn't anyone here from the pre-service, from any teaching colleges and universities end up here.
Well, that's okay. I was thinking many of us probably teach part-time
so
in these programs.
We're all family and friends here, right?
Right.
What we're concerned about is that our digital natives are going into our teaching programs and coming out like digital immigrants. And so what we want to do is go in and we want to poll within the environment. We want to do a compare and contrast with the students and then the experienced teachers. But you didn't hear that. So be surprised when you get that announcement, like in February, okay? Because it is hot. So we definitely saw some differences here between a school site environment and the district environment, and that's very interesting. And that tension in itself is an interesting thing that we pulled out of our data, and we'll continue to be pulling that out of our data. We talked in the data that I shared with you here about some of these emerging technologies, mobile devices, online learning. We didn't talk about gaming, though we asked the students about gaming. Either from a district standpoint, Thea or Ryan at Perry Hall, are you working some things around some of these emerging technologies?
I know Thea has I'm sure an answer
yes.
for this, but let me answer that from a school perspective, and I'll connect this back to policies because I think
okay.
in a way our school pushed some of the policy issues
okay.
that need to be changed. When it comes to mobile technology, I wasn't surprised that students said, "Let me use my own tools and devices," and that's just from my own perspective. But when I see students in my building, they have their own tools, they have their own devices in many cases, and they want to be able to use those devices. So from our perspective, we are using, the school system's policy has changed now, but it was, no handheld devices.
Right.
And so what we did in our particular building is we said, we're only gonna fight the cell phone battle, and we're only gonna fight that sorta. We're going to acknowledge that there's a policy in place, and we're going to say you should have it off and away. But at the same time, what we've said is, if teachers have a way to use those devices and engage students in the classroom, we're going to look the other way, because we're finding that what's happening is they're finding really creative ways to use those tools. I'm forgetting what it is right now, but you can Google on your cell phone
uh-huh.
real quick.
Yeah.
So. What we're seeing is our world language teachers using those tools in the classroom with students. All right, everybody, get out your cell phone. Quick, let's look up this word in French, in Spanish, in Chinese, in Latin, whatever it might be. We have a world language teacher who is has a Spanish website, so he's podcasting in Spanish lessons on a Spanish website. Now, the site's blocked in school, but what he's done with his students is worked with them, so those that have MP3 players or iPods go home, they can grab those Spanish lessons, and he's worked with the students just to sort of mix them up. So basically the students listening to their music, and all of a sudden a 2-minute Spanish lesson will pop in replacement of a song.
Interesting.
And so we're having students do a little bit of that. But again, this is a teacher who's motivated to do this.
Right.
This is not in any sort of way systemic when it comes to those kind of devices. When it comes to the iPods and the MP3 players, we've just simply decided to not fight the battle in our building. So we don't fight it. It's when they're changing classes, when they're in the cafeteria, we don't even. It's fine. They can use the devices, the Game Boys, the DSs. We've actually found that our cafeteria is so much quieter these days because so many of the students are using those devices. So that's our perspective from that.
Okay.
As a building administrator, from the device standpoint,
right.
we have dabbled with online courses. It's for many of the reasons you've shared.
Right.
There's scheduling conflicts. We don't have a qualified teacher in place to teach it.
Well, actually, I totally agree with Ryan about policy, even though I'm working at the district level. And I think one of the biggest, I think that we really have to come face to face with what are we going to let our kids do, all of us in this room, because as long as we've got something that prohibits our teachers from doing what they know they can do and what follows our students, we're not going to be able to use the technologies that are out there for that can be used. And I loved that you shared this morning. If somebody says to me, why use technology, my first answer would be it's engaging. But I picked up on that productivity, because it's the productivity of our students that we're inhibiting if we're not letting them use the tools that they know how to use. So, Ryan, I'm all with you. Maybe we can do something in our 21st century learning.
Yeah, right.
And I know there are others with us on the same. It's just that in a large school system, we really do need to have policies in place that we have a law office that we all call whenever we have a little minor incident that we need to deal with. So we're very aware of being very much in the public eye so that we don't have any really big lawsuits, if you really want to know what the bottom line is.
Sure.
But actually, I think that almost all of our teachers, administrators, and our superintendent would want us to be encouraging teachers to be able to do what they want to do. And I believe that most of the things that come to be that are acknowledgeable and that we say, oh, wow, look what they're doing, it comes from the grassroots. And we just can't keep a lid on the grassroots, the teachers and the students and what's happening. So I agree with that. I just did want to also, I think the question was, what technology has the greatest impact? And I think it's any handheld, because I don't think we're going to be able to ever furnish every student with a laptop in our school system, but we can go to those handheld devices. In fact, we do the statewide inventory, and this year they're not even asking how many computers in your schools. We're asking on that state inventory how many computing devices that can do this. We're looking at, does it have internet access? Does it have enough memory to? So we're not even looking at a computer. We're looking at a device that does the things that we want to have done. So count those as your high end, not whether it's a computer or not. And I do think that our I know everybody wants a whiteboard and they want, we don't even have enough projectors in our classrooms. So we need some kind of a device. We need somewhere to share it. I saw in England now, instead of whiteboards, they have these desks that act like whiteboards. I forget there's a name for
it.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's, we're never going to be able to have the latest and greatest of everything. But I think what we need to do is to be able to give our teachers the very basics for allowing them to be flexible in the way they organize their learning in their classroom. And I think that's your question number four, so I'll wait for that.
And that's a very good point about how are you counting devices, and it actually underscored, Theo, what you said a moment ago, which was about sort of turning our head to think about productivity. So what are we using the devices for, as opposed to just the devices for the sake of devices? We have a couple minutes left, and I think what I'm going to do, rather than asking my questions, I want to see if the audience, if not, I have questions, but otherwise I'll open up to the audience. Yes, sir.
I just want to make a comment about higher education. Several years ago, invited three deans of education from the universities in to talk with them about their preparation. We get down to the subject of technology, and we were told definitively that takes place at the graduate level. And I found that disgusting.
Wow.
Because teachers coming into the system should know those things and be ready to hit the road, if not be on the best time. Second question was, why do you wait there? Because of accreditation status. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the rationale. Question for folks in Baltimore. Have you done any audits on your system, and can you actually show your learning has improved over time to measure the impact?
Did you respond?
You mean, can we prove that technology is making a difference? With actual research, no. I'll be the first to tell you. In our office, we've had 6 years, the same evaluator, very respected person. We can show the data that's collected over 6 years that the people in our office who go out have made a difference in the use of some of our productivity tools in email for teachers. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Are we able to assess the product of the student to see if the technology has made a difference? We have not done that, and it's very hard to find definitive research that puts those two together. That's briefly. I'll just stop there.
Brian, do you have a point? But
there is research out there. There's ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education, actually has a policy brief that's out. It's available from their website that outlines at least 4 or 5 different research studies that have been done that detail the improvements in student achievement with the use of technology. I know the EMINS project in Missouri is one of mm-hmm. them that was discussed right. in the research project, and they can show clearly the gains in student achievement. So I think ISTE actually has a booth as a vendor organization on the vendor floor. They may have that policy brief, or they could certainly show you where it's downloadable as a free PDF.
Right.
So, but if you're looking for research, that policy brief has information, and the back of that policy brief has resources where they picked up that information, which is additional research. So I know that's one avenue.
Oh, there's a lot of research on the carrot.
It's the ISTE.
Yeah.
ISTE.org. And Ryan mentioned a couple of the projects that they chronicled. One is EMINTS, E-M-I-N-T-H-T-S, E-M-I-N-T-S, yeah. And it's from Missouri. It was a research project that was done with schools in Missouri.
I think the other one in there is Maine, and the one-to-one laptop initiative
in Maine. Laptop program
in Maine.
Okay. If you go to ISTE's website, though, you can get
it. I think the title is called The Indelible Link, Technology and Student Achievement. It's a policy brief that they have out.
Yes, ma'am.
I mentioned you're going to be assessing all of your 7th graders. I'm curious if you chose a tool that's already out there, if you developed your own tool.
No, actually, it's a statewide decision, and they chose learning.com's tool. And they've done some work with Arizona, and we're going to be piloting it. We're piloting this week in our schools to see if the technology works.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say from a school building perspective, I'd want them to come see in the building what the students are doing with technology and what the students could be doing with technology. I want them to see these students who are all digitally connected, and then our policies that say take it all off and don't use those tools. I want them to see the laptops in use on the carts. And I mean, that's something very simple that we have, but it's effective in getting students engaged in small groups collaboratively. I want them to see the use of a tool like Collaborative X or something like that, or some of the Google tools that they're saying, not their meaning the school board members themselves, but we're getting from policy saying don't use. Yet there's so much potential with those tools to engage students and have students interact. Yes, there's issues with, you know, we could go down all sorts of roads about what we need to be cautious of, but we could be cautious about everything. And so there needs to be some sort of balance and allow the students to use tools that they're using themselves all the time outside of school.
And I would add to that for school board members who are in this room, I think a really big piece of it is that you are, as a school board member, all the time hearing from parents that their kids are not using the technology, that there's technology in our building, that it's, and one of the biggest things that we hear is that people go into the schools and see the labs are empty. Well, it must be lunchtime or something. We know, And so I would just say, not even visiting schools, but to really get some firsthand information on how is the curriculum integrated? What are we requiring our teachers to do? How do we develop leaders, for visionary leaders in the use of technology? That other level, that ask questions. I would say from our office and all of the curriculum offices, we're in curriculum and instruction, and all of us are wanting to be able to share with our school board members all of the incredibly wonderful things that are happening and what we need to make those happen. Just keep asking us question after question after question, because we just feel like sometimes there are too many other things that our school boards need to deal with, and rightfully so.
Did you have another question?
I would just add, I echo what Theo's saying, especially about curriculum and instruction. It's a challenge when curriculum is designed that does not utilize the technology. So then you're asking teachers to do what? Figure it out for themselves, try to integrate it appropriately. They're worried about test scores. They're worried about their name on all the student data that's coming back. So when curriculum is seamless and integrated with the tools and the technology that's available, it gets used. And so you have to look at what's happening with that curriculum too. And that's nothing against the curriculum offices. It has to be all a part of a seamless process.
And we do have two school board members here. So, send them to conferences, send them to NEC, to FETC, to your state thing. They really need to be educated, too, about what we're talking about.
We've been talking here about the speak-up process, and many of our schools and districts are actually using the speak-up data, particularly from the students, to build a case for their school board members. They're very effectively using that. The administrator survey actually can be taken by a school board member as well. So then that gives you the opportunity to see what is your school board member's point of view, and then you can compare and contrast it with the administrator, the teacher, and the student. But I mean, we have lots of different stories. If anyone's interested in stories about how schools and districts have utilized their student data to better engage their school board or their local community, particularly around funding associated with that, we can give you some examples. Yes, ma'am.
Has your district created a standard for every technology classroom and what that looks like? Have you done that across the board?
Standard for classrooms.
Yes.
Technology.
And that's part of what we're addressing in our 21st Century Learning Group. What does the learning environment look like? And that was one of the things that Julie was going to ask us to address. We really need to look at an environment that doesn't look like a classroom that we have now. And I think that learning environment will be, we're really in Maryland looking at the Partnership for 21st Century Skills. And I believe that addresses the giving a space to children for collaboration, for communicating, for using those devices, for moving around, for being engaged in learning and working in teams. Our business community is going to be critical to what we come up with when we say to our superintendent, this is what we believe a 21st century classroom looks like.
Yes, ma'am, way in the back. So the question is about changing your libraries. What would you like to do?
I think we're doing a lot of that right now. We're looking at digital content. We're looking at video on demand. We're putting in a lot of tools, but I think video on demand is really one of the big ones, and also the hardware. It's going to change, but right now it's the whiteboards, the tablets, those two things.
The other thing would be the ability to access the library from home.
Yeah.
So students can access, and we're doing that, which is real exciting. So
right.
our students, so the library is not the four walls or the eight walls or however the library might be configured in your building, but it goes into the classroom. It's accessible via the terminals that the students have access to wherever they might be in the building, and it's accessible to them at home, and for their parents to access that information, and to cross reference with the county libraries, and those type of things. So those things are the things that are happening in our district right now, and those are really exciting things, because I think you're finding that the library then gets, those walls fall down.
I thought it was interesting in the keynote this morning that he talked about the books, the e-books, because that was something that we've kind of like, that's sort of out there, but he made a great big point of that being one of the big pieces that we should be looking at, talking about the internet and what are you going to do when you use the internet? Going to go buy books at Barnes & Noble. Woo! That really hit me as something that we want to look at in the near future.
Yes, sir.
You talked about the need for just-in-time trading.
Yes.
Could you describe what you're doing and what your vision would be?
Yes. Because there are two things that I think are very important here. One, it's someone to help a teacher who is teaching a lesson knowing how to use that technology in many different ways, whatever it is. And so our vision for that, we're looking at instructional coaches who have a good, firm understanding of the curriculum. And if you do some of the reading nationally now, instructional coaches is the term that we're looking at. Mm-hmm. And those people that are doing that have to be very grounded in the use of technology seamlessly in what they're doing. The other piece that Ryan alluded to, this is important, is that we need to have people who can fix the technology in the buildings. And we don't have a commitment to that as any kind of full-time or part-time. Ryan, I think you said you have 2,400 students, 174 teachers. That technology has to be working. So our vision is either we have an incredible job position that a person could do both of those things, or we identify a technology need and an integration need and look at what do those two people look like in a school. And we're hearing from our parents when you go to our pre-budget meetings around our county, that the parents want us to look at some way to serve their children with technology mentors or coaches or whatever.
Mm-hmm. We've heard the same thing. Yes, sir.
And just to piggyback on that, what I would like to see is I want just-in-time snippets that are online pieces so teachers can go to resources and get mini trainings that are 10 minutes, 5 minutes long on whatever it might be, and you have this resource bank of all that information. We implemented a student system where students swipe into our building and we do a attendance in this using the ID cards and online, and it was a huge transition from a piece of paper that teachers have been using for years. And so we didn't have any training for that, so we created it, and we created it in mini snippets so teachers could go to the web, they could gain access to that information. They weren't there for credit, they weren't there for anything but just being able to know what they needed to do to accomplish their job. And that those kind of pieces are important.
Well, I know we could continue this conversation much longer, but I think I'm holding you up from lunch. And so what I want to do is first thank both Thea and Ryan for all of their insights. Thank you, what a wonderful panel. Thanks all of you for joining us today. Your questions were fabulous. Once again, if you are interested in receiving this PowerPoint, we did actually record this. We're going to make a podcast out of it. You could also, Lori's got some sign-up sheets, or you could also just drop us a card. We'd be happy to send that to you. And I hope you plan to participate with us with Speak Up this year. Look forward to seeing you and looking at your data. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That was fun.
Yes, it was, actually.
It makes
you
kind of like our regular thing now.
Yeah.
I've got
great.
A question
Thank
about
so
how
much.
Do you guys use the survey for
I didn't realize you were in here.
Sometimes better to say less and do more.
We need to do that.
Are you happy to do that?
Thanks. We need to do that. We need to figure out we're not, we have the state does a survey that looks at information across the page. But one of the things that we're not doing is surveying teacher by teacher what they need and what they can use.
Yeah, I would session. Love to do that. Yeah that's great.
So,
good.
Did that play a role already before?
It has. But we need to do it again.
We need need a lot of help in the last
year.
Our legislators like this, in some kind of way.
Well, and I think that we're right on this 21st century. We're really going to look at some really good things. So, and have you met Ryan?
Mr. Hines, nice to meet you. Hi, it's a pleasure.
Nice job.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, we're and I did the same thing in San Jose 2 weeks ago with Julie.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Harrison asked if we'd go to
good luck with it all.
Oh, thank you.
I have done my doctoral dissertation on that topic. Just mentioned 3 or 4 years ago.
And leave my cohort. Travis talking.
He's my board member.
Same point you made. The top 16. The top ones are
when you said
having
that
a technology in place, it has to be seamless, it has to be
but
that,
and that's the key. I mean, it's so good to have you here.
We'll talk, though.
Just got to get the board stamp.
Thank you.
I don't want to take up everybody's time.
My pleasure.
We'll be talking.
Okay.
I'd like to come up to school.
You're welcome to visit anytime. And I know the slide said principal, but I'm not. I'm the assistant principal.
Well, there was another place that said AP, so I figured I understood. Kathy Allen from St. Mary's.
Hi, Kathy. It's a pleasure. You know my sister-in-law.
I was going to say.
Sandy Reality.
And that's why I knew her.
Or you might know my sister-in-law.
No, I did. And that's why I was sitting in the back when she put me in.
She usually speaks her mind, too. So
that's why we get along very well.
It's a pleasure. What are you doing?
I am the vice chair of the Board of Ed there.
Okay.
And I'm the president-elect of the Maryland Association of Boards of Ed. So that's why I'm here, is because Babe sent me to this conference along with
me. See, some is going on these next 2 days, too.
I'm not in particular.
Who had that position right before you?
Sandy Berry. Pat Gordon from Howard County.
Yeah,
and then
I thought it was, yeah.
And then Sandy Berry is the outgoing president.
Well, I think these are important conversations. Whoever's talking about it, it's interesting to have. The data is so fascinating.
Well, we're through MICA, the state organization,
now
we're looking to hire an executive director.
We have to turn it off.
It
was still on, right?
Uh-huh.
With organizations like yours?
Well,
it has to be stopped.